This is the time of year we find several species of sea turtles in the waters off the Cape and Islands, all of whom are endangered. Joining us to discuss threats to sea turtles and ways scientists are learning more about these elusive creatures is Kara Dodge. She's a postdoctoral investigator in the biology department at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. She's been studying leatherback sea turtles for a number of years. Welcome. Good to see you, Kara.
Good morning.
Also with us is Karen Dordeville. She is a sea turtle research associate at Wellfleet Bay's Wildlife Sanctuary. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mindy.
So can we see different species of sea turtles? What are we seeing in our waters? What are the most common turtles that we see?
We have four species that feed in our waters in the late spring, summer, and fall. They're not nesting up here. They nest farther south in the subtropics or tropics, but they come up here to eat. And so we have leatherbacks, loggerheads, greens, and Kemp's Ridleys.
And then, Kara, describe the sea turtle life cycle, why they come up here. As you were saying, they're not breeding here.
Right, they're not breeding here. So we have very productive waters up here in the Northwest Atlantic. And for leatherback turtles in particular, which is the species I study, we have a lot of jellyfish up here in the summertime, and that's what they're here to eat.
They like those jellyfish.
They love the jellyfish.
They can have as many as they want. Sea turtle numbers have been dwindling for a number of reasons. Perhaps one of the biggest reasons is that nesting habitat is disappearing. But we also see turtles injured and killed by ship strikes. So what makes them so vulnerable to ship strikes?
Well, and I would clarify, it's not necessarily ship, meaning big boat, but
could be small boats.
Recreational mm-hmm. boats. Some of the species, especially loggerheads, and sometimes the leatherbacks, are basking at the surface. They can be difficult to see, and especially if the person at the helm of the boat is not paying good attention. So that's something. We have a hotline that is urging boaters to report sightings of sea turtles, both to get data for us and then to teach the boaters that they're there. Mm-hmm. And so we focus on boaters and teaching them to what to look for and to watch out for them so they avoid hitting them.
Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary has maintained a database of sea turtle sightings, but recently you made it mobile friendly so that the boaters can both report a sea turtle and be aware of where they might be. So tell us how that works.
Well, boaters can report sea turtles either online on our website, which just in the last couple of years we've made more smartphone and tablet friendly, or they can report by phone it's 1-888-SEA-TURT. Mm-hmm. So either way, and
easy
they're both easy, right?
Yeah. So where do we typically see higher concentrations of sea turtles? Where is it they like to hang out?
Well, for the leatherback sea turtle, what we found through our research using satellite tags is the sea turtles seem to like the shoal habitats. We often find them in shoal habitats such as Handkerchief Shoal off Bonnemoy. We also see them near Lucas Shoal and Vineyard Sound, sort of productive recreational fishing and commercial fishing areas, actually. We seem to find the sea turtles in those spots. We also, last summer, found turtles were frequently using the ferry lanes, which is not a great place for them to be.
Right. As you mentioned, you study leatherbacks. For listeners not familiar with them, tell us how big they are and how they're different from other sea turtles.
Okay. Leatherbacks are the largest sea turtle species. The turtles we handle up here can be anywhere between 400 up to 1,000 or a little over 1,000 pounds. So they're extremely large. Black sea turtle, which makes them particularly difficult to see in the water, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Even though they're big, they're tough to see.
Even though they're big. Yeah. So only a small part of that 1,000 pounds is actually poking up above the surface. Mm-hmm. So they're very hard to see. And what makes them different from other sea turtles, they're different in a number of ways, but they're able to actually maintain a warmer body temperature, so they're able to expand their range further north. So these turtles are not only found here off Cape Cod, but they're also found as far north as Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and Canada.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Sea turtles are vulnerable to entanglement in fishing gear. Kara, has your research given you insight into some of the other reasons that they get entangled? I mean,
yeah, that's the research. We're actually doing a project now. We're calling Turtle Cam through the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, where we're using a smart robot, underwater robot, to follow and film these sea turtles to better understand their behavior, take direct observations using video to understand their behavior and how that behavior could potentially lead to entanglement in fishing gear.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, they sort of got into it, and they can't go backwards, right? So
right.
That's another reason why they get into trouble sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they have a tendency, to roll?
Yeah, so that's that's actually something we've found with this project, is that turtles that are startled, they will actually often flip upside down, and they will roll. It's almost like putting their shell towards whatever the startle, what startled them. So it's sort of a defensive posture. But of course, if they did that with fishing gear involved, they would actually roll themselves up into the gear.
Right. And Karen, Wolfie Blay Wildlife Sanctuary has been federally designated as the chief responder to sea turtle strandings in southeastern Massachusetts. So walk us through the steps of disentangling these guys, because they don't know you're there to help.
Well, the strandings we respond to are when they're dead on the beach. Mm-hmm. We are not the disentanglers
of
sea turtles. That's people like CARA or the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown. We respond to the dead ones, so the ones that have been in the summer.
Or do they sometimes just appear to be dead? Are they always
dead? Well, I need to differentiate the summer strandings from our fall
When they're cold stunned.
That's a different event, really. But our summer strandings are individual turtles that have either been entangled and died by drowning or struck by boats. We can't always determine cause of death, but it's usually one of those two things. So we get a report of one on a beach, and one of our staff goes to that turtle with our toolbox and measuring gear, and we photograph and measure and sample, and each case is different depending on where it is and what kind of turtle. We can help the town dispose of it, or sometimes we actually bury if that's appropriate for that site. But we try to learn as much as we can from each one, because as you said, there our four species are either endangered or threatened.
Right. So, Carol, talk about this, the disentangling them. What's involved in that process?
Okay. Well, I've disentangled a number of turtles. I do it. I should clarify that I do that as for the Center for Coastal Studies on their behalf. They're actually the lead organization. But disentangling turtles, you really need to be trained, and you also need to be authorized. That's why I work via the Center for Coastal Studies on that. And they're very large and powerful. As I said, they can be up to 1,000 pounds. So you want to know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We never, ever, ever get in the water to disentangle turtles. You do it from the side of a vessel. And really the best thing to do if you see an entangled turtle here is to call the Center for Coastal Studies hotline number or call the Coast Guard, who will then get in touch with the Center for Coastal Studies.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Right over Channel 16.
I was going to say, because you can call the Coast Guard 24/7.
That's right. And that's what people should do. They should not try to do it themselves.
Right. You could get hurt, but you could also hurt the turtle, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. All right. So, Kara, your research began tagging turtles that were disentangled, but you realized that the data collected from impacted animals might not be giving you a true picture of their natural behavior. So then you began tagging leatherbacks. And what's the process for tagging them, and what have we learned from that tagging?
So the process for tagging them, we actually will go out with a very large hoop net. It's a big net, a big pole, and a hoop that has a net that can come off. And so we net the turtle with that, and then we bring the turtle on board a research vessel, and we attach tags and take samples once the turtle is safely on board, and then we release it. It's a very logistically difficult process. We work with a spotter pilot to help us find the turtles. We work with experienced commercial fishermen to help us catch the turtles. We have learned a tremendous amount from the satellite tagging program. We've put out about 27 satellite tags at this point, so we're getting information on their migration routes, where they spend most of their time. We call it high-use habitat, their dive behavior, where they go in the wintertime, where they spend their winters.
I would imagine that these satellite tags are pretty expensive.
They're very expensive, especially we use GPS satellite tags because we want to get the best location information we can get. And so those tags run about $5,000 a piece.
Wow. Yeah. Are you able to keep them? I mean, do the turtles sometimes lose them and you lose that tag? Does that happen?
Yes. So the turtles eventually, we want them to lose the tag. Mm-hmm. So when we attach tags to turtles here, we're unlikely to encounter those turtles again, unlike on a nesting beach where the turtles will come back to nest and you can remove a tag. So we want the tags to stay on for approximately 1 year, and then we want it to come off. We don't want the turtles carrying those tags long term, because once the batteries die, it would just be a burden to them, right, and not giving us any data.
Yeah. So how do you retrieve them?
We don't. So all the data is transmitted via satellite.
Oh.
So when the turtle surfaces to breathe and the antenna of the tag breaks the surface of the water, we have their polar orbiting satellites that are listening, basically, for that signal from the turtle. And that data is transmitted to the satellites and then back to basically back to us via our computer.
Yeah. And you mentioned you're putting GoPro cameras on them.
Yes.
And how does that work?
So that's a different type of tagging we're doing. It's a much shorter term. So with satellite tags, you're looking at up to a year or more of data. With this fine scale work, we're looking at a number of, like, a day of data, or if we're lucky, 6 or 7 hours of data. And we use suction cups to attach those tags. We don't actually catch the turtles. We tag the turtle. It comes to up to the surface to breathe, and we'll put a suction cup tag on the turtle's shell, and then that suction cup comes off after a period of hours while we're tracking the turtle.
So you're basically kind of staying with the turtle so you can grab that.
We stay with the turtle, but far enough away that we're trying not to impact their natural behavior. Yeah.
Right. And that's the whole idea, is you want to figure out what they're doing naturally.
Exactly.
So what's next in your research? What are some of the other questions about sea turtles that you hope to answer?
Well, we have another field season of the Turtle Cam Project, which is really behavior focused and also habitat focused. We're collecting high resolution data on their habitat, so salinity, temperature, depth, chlorophyll, to try to understand what makes optimal habitat for these animals for foraging habitat. So that's happening this summer. And I think some of the long-term questions, one of the things we really don't know, to get back to some of these threats, is how these turtles that are dealing with disentangled turtles, how they fare after they're disentangled. And so we want to actually start doing some satellite tagging work on animals that have been disentangled.
Right. And see the difference.
And just to look, to compare the behaviors. Yeah.
Yeah. We mentioned that they don't breed here. But their breeding grounds are getting more and more developed. So what's happening to these poor turtles? They go home and home's not there anymore.
Well, yes. I mean, degradation of the breeding beaches is a huge problem, although there are some successes, too. Just in the last year, a little over a year, the green turtles, for instance, in our part of the world have been reclassified from endangered to threatened.
Oh, that's so good news. Yeah.
Yes, there are more green turtles being born, hatching. Mm-hmm. So that's a success. And there are some countries, in particular Trinidad and French Guiana, who are protecting nesting beaches of the leatherbacks, which Kara studies. And those have been very successful. Trinidad, for instance, has turned its the practice of catching the turtles and eating the eggs into a tourist industry. Mm. People go to watch the turtles nest, and it's that's proving successful. So along with the threats come some successes, which is a good thing.
Once the fall comes and our waters turn colder, you touched on this, the sea turtles, they should be heading to warmer waters. They don't all do that. And sometimes they stay too long and get cold, stunned, and wash up on our beaches. Do we know why some of them don't head south when they should?
Well, that's a point of a lot of question. But the three species of the so-called hard-shell turtles that we have, so we have the leatherbacks, which Kara talked about, but then, as I mentioned, the loggerhead, the greens, and the Kemp's Ridleys, those are so-called hard-shell turtles. And the ones up here are primarily juveniles, so they're small. They've been feeding, and what we think happens is as they're feeding north of Cape Cod, they begin heading south and they get stuck by that arm of the Cape. By both cold water currents, they get down into Cape Cod Bay where it's warmer farther south, and they just don't get out. And as the water gets colder, they are truly cold-blooded, unlike the leatherback. And so as the water turns colder, they're slowing down, their metabolism is slowing, they stop being able to swim, and so they just get stuck. And then onshore winds begin washing them in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the big cold stun event happens.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, how some years we could have just a few, and other years there are just lots and lots of cold stun turtles.
Well, the last 3 years have been the three biggest ever. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't show signs of diminishing.
And we don't know why that is, right? I mean, why some years are more than others?
Yeah. Not really.
Yeah. No. Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary coordinates volunteers to comb the beaches for cold stun turtles. And that is a huge undertaking. So I know right now we're not looking at Cold Stone, but looking ahead, I would imagine you're always looking for volunteers to help out with that.
We are, and volunteers have to go through very specific training and be on our call lists for certain. They have to know the beach that they're going to be sent to, because that patrolling of beaches happens day and night and when it's windy and very cold. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's very different than the summer responses.
Right. And so, but they would, you would want to be training them soon, right? And,
we do it in the fall.
In the fall. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if people are interested, they can get in touch with that.
Yes.
Now for the summer, we're looking at, you're mostly looking at boaters to try and help you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's really the program that we're pushing right now, is trying to engage boaters in helping us. And we often find boaters reporting, I've been on the water for 20 years. I've never seen a sea turtle. I went out and I saw one and they were so excited. And if on our website, which is seaturtlesightings.org, that's sightingsplural.org. If they leave a phone number, or if they call and report the sighting and leave a phone number, we call them back quickly and discuss the sighting. And so many people are so excited. And we're urging boaters to look at the photos and videos on our website to create what we think of as mental search images, to kind of know what they're going to see out there. We don't get very many reports of the little one, the Kemp's Ridleys and the Greens, which are very small up here. We're getting loggerheads, which are bigger up here, and then the leatherbacks.
Yeah, of course, the leatherbacks are the really big ones. How big are the loggerheads that we have around here?
Well, most of those are immature also, but still the age class that, or the age classes that we have, are bigger and older than the Greens and Ridleys. So the loggerheads are often, 2.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm. So easier to spot.
And lighter brown with yellow and orange on them. So much easier to spot.
Yeah. And it is pretty exciting. I've not seen a turtle out on the water.
Yeah.
And I can imagine it would be pretty exciting when you do. And in this day of, Facebook and, all of the other social media things, people are wanting to document it. Look at this. So that could be helpful for you. So what you're looking for is the date, the time, the location is best you can you can say where they are, the time of day, maybe about how big it is. So even if you can't find that turtle again, at least you have that bit of information. Mm. Do you like them to take photos too?
Absolutely. Yeah. Photos are great. And it's so much easier now to get a GPS coordinate, and that's wonderful. And so as we get sightings, especially of leatherbacks, we submit those to Cara, because that helps her to know when there are enough around for her to mobilize her troops and get out there and tagging.
Yeah. It's really integral to what we do. We work together on that.
So when somebody says, hey, I've seen a leatherback, you're like, what, where?
Right. I need a certain number of them to actually push off the dock. But Karen is amazing. She, as soon as she gets a report, she usually gets that report to me within hours. Mm-hmm. And we're able to use that information to then be very strategic about where we do our work.
How many do you have to have in a sighting to go out?
I like to have a group, which could be anywhere from 2 to 3, because if 2 to 3 are seen in a small area, that means there are probably more.
Probably more that just haven't noticed them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Last year we had two Highline ferry captains who were reporting leatherbacks, and that's what led to the ones Cara found in the ferry lanes. But they were seeing them frequently and avoiding them.
That's good.
We're
trying to anyway. Yeah. Cara Dodge, postdoc at HUI, and Karen Dordeville, Sea Turtle Research Associate at Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Thanks so much for coming in and talking
with
us.
Thanks, Mindy.